Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophies, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish.
Welcome to Circle Craft Study with Selena Fox. This is Selena Fox, and tonight we explore the realm of air magic. As we begin, pay attention to your own connection with air, your breath. Taking a deep, slow breath in, and releasing it. The breath of life. Air within us and around us. We call to the powers of air. Sacred air, we honor you as breath and breathing. We honor you as winds, breezes. We connect with you as atmosphere, clouds, light, sacred air. We honor you in the east. We honor you as part of the thinking realm, the realm of mind, of cognition, of words, of communications. We connect with you as golden radiance, as clear, fresh air, as sunshine streaming through atmosphere. We know you as sylphs, fairy folk that are winged ones. We connect with you with all flying beings. We honor you and your connections with cycles of life, of nature. Air in the east with spring, with dawn, with waxing moon, in life, youth, young adulthood. And we honor you and call on your powers of communication, intelligence, knowledge, wisdom, swiftness. Sacred air, we call to you. Sacred air, we honor you. Be with us tonight as we explore ways of working with you in spiritual practice, as we work with you to make magic, as we work with you for personal transformation. There's a number of different approaches to air magic. I think the easiest way is, as we began tonight, is to work with breath. There are different patterns that you can work with through breathing. You can have your normal breathing pattern that you have just as a matter of day-to-day life. And you also can work with specific breathing patterns to help work with air in your body, in your mind, helping your mood, helping your spirit, helping your stamina. I'd like to share with you some breathing patterns that I work with in my own work. The deep, slow breaths are really good for centering. Breathing in through your mouth and filling your lungs and feeling relaxation flowing through your whole being and exhaling, fully exhaling. Breathing deep again and exhaling, relaxing as you breathe in and as you breathe out. You can make sounds with your breath to intensify and deepen your practice. Making a sound with your in-breath generally works best when you're using your mouth. And then as you exhale, using sighs, using sounds to release. So by conscious breathing, and breathing very fully, you get more air in your lungs, and as you empty your lungs, you truly can release not only the breath, but let go of tension and concerns in your whole being. Some people like to work with different combinations of breathing through mouth and exhaling through nose, or breathing through nose, exhaling through nose, or breathing through nose, exhaling through mouth, or breathing in and out with the mouth. Different combinations, different rhythms. So for some people, they assign certain patterns with correspondences depending on whether the nose or the mouth is used in breathing. What I've found even more useful than that particular approach is the breath count and the 4-4-4-4 method is something that's really good for calming down, relaxation. It helps dispel anxiety and stress. And it gives your mind, which is employed with doing the count, something to focus on, and it is a type of breathing exercise that has been used as a holistic health practice. Essentially, you breathe in on a 4 count, you hold the breath on a 4 count, you breathe out on a 4 count, and you hold breath out empty on a 4 count. So breathing in, 2, 3, 4, holding, 2, 3, 4, breathing out, 2, 3, 4, holding, 2, 3, 4, breathing in, 2, 3, 4, holding, 2, 3, 4, breathing out, 2, 3, 4. Holding empty, 2, 3, 4. When I do that method for my own practice, I mentally, with self-talk in my mind, do the count. If I'm facilitating that with a group of people, I'm generally doing a count such as I've just done here. And one of the things about that rhythmic breathing is that you shift into being one with the experience. It's a kind of dance with your breath pattern. Another form of breathing is one for someone who is advanced in their work with centering and working with the breath, which is to breathe rapidly in and out. Not a good idea for beginners. It's a kind of hyperventilation. But there are some forms of Eastern practice that use this as a way to move life force, or what some would call the kundalini, up the back and out through the top of the head as part of a way of enlivening oneself. How you breathe is really important as well. It's best, if you're doing ceremonial breathing, to sit comfortably with your back straight, feet on the ground, and really being relaxed but focused, having your body in balance. Breathing from the diaphragm rather than just from the throat. Not only does that help the air and carbon dioxide exchange process, having a fuller experience, but it has your whole body being part of the sacred breath. Why do sacred breath? It can be done for relaxation. Breathing with intention to be centered can be excellent preparation for any form of ritual practice. Taking relaxed breathing and developing skills in that can help you if you are finding yourself under stress. By regularly working with your breath, then it becomes easier to calm yourself down, to have the physiological, psychological, and when it involves being with other people, the sociological shifts necessary to be centered and to be in a place where you can draw on the deeper wisdom. Breathing patterns also are very helpful in doing any type of journey work, meditative journey work, whether that is done through guided imagery, through focusing on a mandala or other piece of sacred art, listening to drum rhythms, having imagery to guide the journey. Most meditations have some form of breath work as preparation to cleanse the body of stress and barriers to going deeper, to relax the body to allow the deeper parts of oneself to be more activated. And breathing, again, is used at the end of the meditation to shift from relaxed breathing to a more awake state of breathing. There are some other magical ways of working with breath I'd like to share. And one has to do with using breath to energize some magical object. One might make a charm for the house, such as a witch bottle, which has herbs and other items in it to protect the home, to bless the home, to energize the home with peace, tranquility, joy, well-being. Some will use as a way of energizing that, not only holding the jar with its contents and its lid off and focusing intention in, but will actually blow one's own breath into the jar as a way of enlivening that. Some will use breath as a way of energizing some other type of tool. Magical aid may use it to bless some person or place instead of using incense or feather to move air around. One may use breath to do so. There's some forms of shamanic practice in which the healer senses the energy field of a person in need as part of them coming and receiving a healing and finding areas that are blocked and will actually suck negativity out, hold it in the mouth, and spit it out and discharge it. And then going around the energy field of a person again, taking healing breath and direct it to the person. So those are some ways of working with sacred air as part of magical practice. Let's look at air in motion now. Air in motion, that is the wind. Experiencing wind, meditating on the sounds of the wind, doing divination on a windy day, listening to the wind sounds, whispers on the wind. Some find that calling up wind, it's a form of dance with moving air, is something that is done to bless a space or for people that are seeking to have some impact on weather conditions in their local area, may do some form of wind work to help bring about rain in a drought-stricken area, for example. It isn't so much a human commanding wind as a human being in touch with wind and being part of the flow of potentiality for the needed rain to come, or in cases where there's too much wind, calming the wind and focusing on working with that. That's a much more advanced technique, and one really needs to be very in tune with wind, very aligned with it as part of spiritual practice to be able to have some kind of interactive effect. One of the things that some people do as part of group rituals and individual rituals is to whisper something that one wishes to come true into the wind, especially if there's a nice breeze or even a stronger breeze going. Some people like to actualize the release of intention. That may take the form such as at a peace summit, where symbols of peace, often white doves, are released at a moment as prayers are sent out for peace for a particular area or situation or for the world as a whole. In more recent decades, some have taken to releasing balloons into the air. If you decide to use that technique as a way of remembering someone who has passed on, or of celebrating a graduation or a wedding or a birth, please make sure that you use balloons that are of material that are biodegradable, and that whatever cord or strings or ribbons also biodegrade, so that you aren't contributing to pollution of the atmosphere. There are other things that one can do with the air, and something that's been done at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve on a few occasions are to release some floating lanterns. Here again, you need to pay attention to the environment and do it in a safe way. You don't want to do it when it's super dry conditions. At night is the most dramatic, when there's some dew around, can be just a very spectacular view. Certainly, some people like to shine lights into the air and do other things with the air. Having ribbon dancing, long ribbons on sticks that are woven through the air as part of dance, can be a really wonderful way to direct group energy. It can look wonderful in processions. So waving things in the air, whether it's a flag or a banner or ribbons, that can really add some wonderful things to ceremonial activities. Another thing involving the air that is around us is to dance. To dance outdoors, dance if a gentle breeze is up, move with the breeze, and to actually have the air help you with your ritual experience. Twirling in the air and moving hands in the air can all be pleasurable as well as powerful. Blowing bubbles into the air is another thing, as a way of working with air as a vehicle, and whatever that you are directing into the air, have the intention, and if you're with a group, have you all focus on that. Making sounds in the air, sounding a bell, sounding chimes. Some like to have wind chimes in a ritual space, and as wind comes up, it helps one not only feel the wind, but the wind itself becomes a kind of musician playing with the chimes. It's actually a cathedral in Barcelona that's designed so as the wind flows through the spires on the towers, that sounds are made. Whistling has been connected with air. In fact, some see playing the pipes, a very ancient form of instrument, as a really powerful way of working with air for ritual activity. Speaking words, making sounds, sounding things in the air, calling through the air, listening to sounds also can be a type of air magic. What many people do as part of air magic is to burn something that creates scented smoke, incense, as part of rituals, or it can be a ritual in itself. It can be a smudge stick or a joss stick. It can be incense fumed over charcoal blocks. It can be herbs burnt on their own, such as rosemary or sage in an incense burner. By creating sacred smoke, you have the aroma, and air becomes more visible. One can do offerings to the divine. One can send out prayers through burning incense. Incense can clear a space. That's a favorite home blessing technique, is to move around each room of the home with incense to cleanse it, the cleansing power of air. Some in home blessing not only move around the space with incense, but open all the windows and doors and letting fresh air flow through the space. And so there's a combination of natural wind flowing as well as ceremonial air through incense. Incense can uplift a space, and sacred smoke can be a wonderful atmosphere for some ceremonies, creating a mist and a beautiful setting. In some shamanic traditions, working with some type of sacred pipe ceremony, such as some Native American tribes will do, has been a way of working with sacred air. Humans have different relationships with tobacco, so you have to make your own choice around that. But there are other things, such as mullein, which have been used as a sacred smoke, mugwort, and some other herbs as a way of connecting with air within as well as around. Some prefer to burn incense herbs only as incense. Some in the smudging process, which is another name for incense burning, can take some of that incense into themselves as well. But know your body and know your circumstances so that you keep your lungs and the air around you in a good way that's healthy for you and for others. I'd like to also share some additional ways of working with air and air tools and air symbols. Air travel. When I go and do speaking around the U.S. and sometimes in other countries as well, air travel usually is involved. And part of the air magic that I do prior to boarding an airplane is to have myself centered and do a blessing, not only on my seat on the plane, but on the plane. And so that there'll be safe air passage, that the flight will go well, that it will be safe, that it will arrive on time, that the luggage will get there in good shape, and other things connected with air travel. If you fly in an airplane, you may want to do a sacred air blessing as part of that work. Call on the spirit of air, or call on air in one or more of its sacred forms, spirit of air, power of air, sylphs, air spirit. You can use different forms of expression for that, to be with you and to guide you in your journey and to guide the plane and those that are staffing the plane, piloting it, and all of those, to do a blessing prior to takeoff, while you're in the air, and upon landing. Some air magic that I do while I'm on an airplane is to really appreciate clouds and being high in the air and to experience the sensation of flying. I'm typically in jetliners, but I've been in smaller airplanes, including a Cessna a few years ago, and there you really do get a sense of the air. And one of the things that I like about flying is the sense of being in that element. In addition to flying in airplanes, there's people who do a combination of flying. There's some parasailing, where you can actually be a kite of sorts. I've seen this out at ocean resorts, where you go out in the ocean. I've done this myself, and you go up sometimes 800 feet, go high in the air, and there's a huge parasail above you, a kind of sail, and it's a kind of sailing in the air. So there's different ways of experiencing air. Some people go up in a hot air balloon, and there's even now jet suits and other things for skilled professionals who wish to experience the air in some other ways. In addition to the actual experience of physically being in the air, working with flying imagery can be really powerful as one does spiritual practice. Indeed, across cultures and faith traditions, typically there is some sacred winged one. Angels, fairy folk, griffins, lions with wings, mythological creatures, sometimes a god or a goddess will have a winged aspect. The Valkyries, for example, winged Isis, Mercury or Hermes with winged feet. Working with the image of flying, working with feathers and feather images, working with flying creatures, owls and hawks, songbirds, bats, lightning bugs or fireflies, just some examples of imagery that you can work with as you connect with air in a sacred way. I'd like to guide a short meditation using flight. And for this, find a comfortable place to be. Close your eyes. Use your breath to relax you. Let the sounds of my words interface with your own deep self. to do this journey in a way that is appropriate for you, where you are, at this point in time and space, and in your life's journey. As you take some breaths to relax yourself, use the phrase, sacred air, I attune to you. Sacred air, I attune to you. Sacred air, I attune to you. And continue to relax yourself and attune to sacred air. And then in your mind's eye, imagine a large screen, and a scene appears of a field with a wide open sky. Know that if you wish to do so, you can enter this screen and become one with this journey. And when it feels right to do so, project yourself into the screen. And as you do, you stand and you look in each of the directions around you. To the north, to the east, to the south, to the west. You see your point of beginning beneath you, and then you look above you, and you stretch your arms out on either side, and as you do, you have the experience of wings forming. You gently move your newly formed wings, and you draw on the wisdom of sacred air and flight. And when you are ready, move your wings more exuberantly and experience yourself lifting off the freedom of flight. Fly into the sky, as high as you wish, do a large circle, and in the next few moments of quiet, as you fly, focus on freedom and joy. And then, seeing the place where you started, you gently descend, coming to rest naturally and easily at the place where you started. Reflect on freedom. Reflect on soaring. Reflect on the power of imagination and give thanks. As you hold your hands to your heart, the wings on your arms flow right into your whole being, and you return to your human form again, carrying with you the experience of being a winged one, of flying, and knowing if you have need to do this, to develop your imagination, to help burst through any creative blocks, or simply to do something fine and fun with your mind. Know that you have the ability to return to this place and to do this work again. Now, taking some deep, slow breaths, you experience yourself moving out of the screen, standing before it again, and resuming a more waking state of consciousness. So that's an example of a short flying exercise and meditation. One can use the meditation on flight to actually transport through time to the past or to the future, or transport to other places. There's many different ways of using imagination to journey, and the winged one can be a powerful one, because most of us have had experience looking at actual winged ones, whether it's watching eagles, hawks, turkey vultures, or some other large bird in flight, or watching it in a movie or some other means, hearing stories. These stories of flight can be inspiring for us. And if we find ourselves being stuck, caught in kind of a rut in life, or even in a negative thought pattern, working with sacred air, breathing to shift consciousness, winged imagery to shift consciousness, or some form of air magic to change consciousness, dancing with the wind, burning some incense, sounding a bell, all can help one shift talk in one's mind, as well as mood and feeling states. Some tools that you can have for ritual practice that you may find really helpful is to get some type of incense burner and some incense. Joss sticks are pretty commonly available, and a joss stick holder can be a long wooden, metallic, or ceramic holder where the incense stick is placed in a hole at one end, kind of curves up, and it catches the ash of the burning incense as it goes along. Or you can take a small flower pot and put some sand or soil in it and use that as your incense burner. I also like to have at least one feather as part of my ritual supplies, put a feather on an altar. And I like working with feathers with incense smoke, or in situations where burning incense smoke is just not possible, I can use the feather as a symbol of air, as well as a tool for actually moving air around. I think it's good to have some type of musical instrument that works with air. I have something that's called a melodica, which is a little keyboard that you blow into. It's a wind instrument, but you can actually sound different notes. I have a recorder. I have a tin whistle. I have some pan pipes. And I have whistles and ocarinas So I really enjoy working with air instruments as a way of summoning air, of attuning to air, of calling the powers of air in a sacred circle. In addition to these, I like to have pinwheels and some other things that will actually be activated by the air. Little fans, and I have hand fans that I move back and forth. They're, most of them are woven out of some kind of basket or straw type material, palm fronds and other things. And I find that working with a fan is not only a way of moving air around, and it can be really helpful on really hot days, but it also is a way of attuning to air. So in closing, I'd invite you to take a look at how you work with sacred air already in your spiritual work, and select something from tonight or inspired by tonight to start incorporating into your spiritual practice. We give thanks to the sacred air. We give thanks to breath and breathing. We give thanks to the winds, clouds, atmosphere. We give thanks to sacred smoke, to incense. We give thanks to winged ones. We give thanks to air in its many forms. As we continue our journey in life, we give thanks for the air that we breathe. We give thanks for the air that makes life possible in this world. We give thanks. We give thanks. We give thanks. And now in this final part of our evening, there's opportunity to share some announcements, to have some conversations, and I invite into this part David and Jeanette Ewing. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello.
And I'm wondering if you have particular air ritual tools or practices that you find really useful in your own work. Do you burn incense or work with feathers and fans and things? And
well, we do typically burn incense quite a bit. We've used it for, you know, smudging, clearing people as they come into ritual space. We do it in our home fairly regularly. We've also used smudge, the sage, and lemongrass. No.
Sweetgrass.
Sweetgrass, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some people are allergic to the sage, so we use sweetgrass a lot of times instead as a substitute for sage for doing that clearing and cleansing part of things.
Yeah, and so we have a couple of different, I've used single feathers. There are some, larger fan-type, things that are a little more ornamental-looking that we've also used especially in large ritual spaces.
Yeah.
Typically at our home, it would be a stick or cone incense, simply because of the risks of setting off an alarm, smoke alarm, with anything that is smokier than that. So things like burning things like frankincense or myrrh or, other resins, using a charcoal briquette, those kinds of things we would tend to do outside and using, larger amounts of sage and things like that. We've also burned rosemary, dried rosemary. We grow it in our backyard. We have for years. And, you know, that's one of the things that we've also used numerous times. Yeah, we don't have fans, but we do the feather thing quite a bit. So that's, you know, one of the main tools that we have tended to use. And, you know, especially in our house, we use it for mundane purposes as well as, you know, relaxation and, you know, maybe meditation-based.
Mm-hmm.
We do have numerous cats, so incense is often used in our home. So
yeah, well, and, you know, having alternative ceremonial tools to work with air in indoor settings can really help. When I'm going into hospitals, usually I'm not able to burn things these days. You know, they've most hospitals have totally non-smoking, not only in the buildings but on the grounds. And as long as the feather isn't, you know, creating any problems, some parts of hospitals are so sanitized you couldn't even bring a feather in, in which case you can use your hands and wave your hands back and forth through the air if need be. But I do think that having options is a good thing. And I'm looking at some comments in the chat room, and Jeff talked about laughter, and that's certainly created with air. It's a wonderful kind of magic. And also talked about skydiving. Well, I haven't done that yet in this life. I've gone up on the parasail, but haven't yet done the skydive thing. But I know some people find that is really a fabulous way of moving through air. And I do think that as we continue to connect with nature and the elements, even if we've been on this path for a really long time, we can find additional ways to understand and attune to each of the elements. I liken it to a masterpiece painting. You can look at the painting multiple times and continue to find new things and be inspired and have more meanings coming forth, which is why some museums with some of the masterpieces that are considered, you know, top masterpieces have a number of benches and chairs around so people can really sit and contemplate. Well, just as you can with a painting, you can with an elemental force. And I do think it's important to develop a rapport with each of the elements, even if one seems to be a stronger element for oneself than the others. We're going to continue our element series this month, and at the very end of October, we're going to be doing an Otherworld Samhain rite. Some people call October the season of the witch because of the Samhain time and some folklore witch images coming up in different places. One of the things that I'm doing this month is really taking a look at witch imagery, and our full moon circle at Circle Sanctuary, which will be on the 17th of October, has witch lore as its focus, and we're going to have an opportunity to bring witch symbols and witch tales, and if people want to put on pointy hats and actually celebrate an image that has been increasingly complicated, and to really look at the nature connections with the witch word, as well as look at ways of having more freedom for people who use the witch word as a symbol and as a name for their form of spirituality, of connecting with nature in sacred ways. I also want to do an announcement for South Jersey Pagan Pride Day. And if all goes well, all of us will be up at Pensauken, New Jersey, Cooper River Park. And it's 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, October 5th. I'm going to do a keynote, Visions of the Pagan Future. For those of you who are able to come, there will be some discussion, some sharing of ideas, and I'm doing a Celebrating Pagan Community ritual. And David, and I think Jeanette's going to be able to join us later on in the afternoon, and I and some others are going to be at the Circle Sanctuary booth in the vending area. And David, you're doing a ritual, the closing ritual.
Yeah, I guess it is the closing. I just kind of clued in on that recently. that we'll be doing
the schedule that just went up online.
Right. Always last minute changes.
So what are you doing again?
It's the warrior blessing. Yeah.
It's the closing ritual.
Yeah, so I guess we're closing the day with the warrior blessing ritual.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, it is. So I'll be there doing the circle tent. We'll have some editions of the Circle magazine, and, you know, we'll be selling there and some other things and information about all the things the Circle does. And
we will be collecting things all throughout the day for Operation Circle Care.
Right. So we'll be gathering items for, donated items to put to the, for the care packages that we send to military pagans who are stationed overseas.
Yeah, so those of you who can come and join us, that'd be wonderful. And the following weekend will be Eastern Iowa Pagan Pride Day, and we will have some people from our center who will be going there. And I see that Jeff talks about Central Illinois Pagan Pride Day, and that's October 12th in Normal in Anderson Park. And it's wonderful. We're still in the Pagan Pride season and want to celebrate Pagan Pride. Stay tuned for the Pagan Priest Show, and tune in tomorrow night for Circle Sanctuary's other weekly show, Pagan Warrior Radio, with David and Jeanette and Pamela Kelly. And what are you having this week?
So tomorrow night on Pagan Warrior Radio, we're going to be talking about divination, how it's performed, methods and practices, and just the general discussion about different ways to do divination and how people do it in different cultures and practices.
That's wonderful. Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight, as well as all of you who listen later. And if you want to find out more about Circle Sanctuary, you can find us on the web, www.circlesanctuary.org, and you can find us on Facebook. And if you want to find out more about things that I'm doing on Facebook, go to my main page, Selena Fox Updates, on Twitter, Selena_Fox, and on the web, www.selenafox.com. Well, may you all have a wonderful crone moon night. We're moving to the dark moon, and thanks for tuning in. What do we have to take us out to the Pagan Priest Show?
Well, tonight we're signing off with the song by Wendy Rule called Fly Away. Good night.
Good night.
powers of life. Fill me and enfold me.
Suffuse me and empower me.
Awaken me the fire of passion,
courage, and creativity,
which always burns within.
As a fire in the night banishes the dark,
so may the fire in my belly banish
all that holds me back or frightens me,
that I may live in the light
and seize the joy of every moment.
There is one power in the universe,
and I am a perfect manifestation of that power.
Proud, beautiful, and unafraid.
No power may hold me back or cage me,
for the power of the Spirit is in me.
I rejoice in my life and every action.
I love and am loved in return.
I reflect the light of deity in my life
with boundless passion and creativity,
with which I honor myself and the divine.
For that which is above is like unto that which is below.
Yea, both are equal, for neither is complete without the other. But together all things are possible. Welcome to Pagan Priest, and thank you for joining us.
Greetings and good morning, afternoon or evening, wherever you may be tuning in from, whether here live right now or listening to the archives. Welcome to the Pagan Priest Show. As we gather from the east and the south, the west and the north, and enter our circle. Oh, thank you so much, Selena, for, as always, a wonderful one-hour lead-in to the Pagan Priest Show. I know that you are loved by so many folks, and we appreciate you here on Blog Talk Radio. This is Mike Neal, your host tonight. The Pagan Priest Show, as many of you already know, is an opportunity for a rotating group of men, you know, recognized as pagan leaders. We come together each Tuesday to share and discuss various topics. And for tonight, we are joined by Onyx. Onyx, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mike. How are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
Doing just fabulous. Thank you.
That's good. That's good. I know that you were filling in on last week's show, weren't you, with Terry and Lord Don?
Yes, I was.
Yes, so, and I appreciate you, and will you be a regular on my Monday night show now?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
I'll be here anytime you want me to be there.
Okay. Sometimes can you come as two people?
I'm sorry. Well, you know, I've been working on that bi-location thing. The bi-location works, but, you know, the voices don't change.
Well, with a little practice. Well, that's great. We're also expected to have Marquis on tonight from Gateway Garlic Urban Farm, and I'll keep an eye out for him. But in the meantime, why don't you catch up with me and the listeners on what you've been doing since last time you're on the show with me. I know you were on last week, but catch
okay,
up on what you've been doing.
A month ago, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right.
No, a couple of weeks ago. Kind of hard to remember what exactly has happened since the last time we spoke on the air, but during the past month, of course, we've had here at the Shrine, we've had the public Maven event that went really well. We have the private full moon espits for the members that went really well. We have a class each month that always goes really well. We always enjoy to get together and do classes. Willow and I were privileged to be able to do a hand fasting last weekend, or actually this last weekend, yes, on Saturday.
Really?
Was very well received. The couple that were hand fasted were pagan. A couple of the guests were their best friends, but by and large, everyone else was not. We put circle up as we generally do for hand fastings, and there were only me, Willow, the couple to be hand-fasted, their couple friends, and the father of the bride that was there in the circle with us. Everyone else, about 15, 16 people, decided they did not want to enter circle, which was perfectly fine. But after the ritual was over, they seemed to be very impressed. They liked the ritual. They liked the symbolism and everything that went through it. So I think it was a very positive experience for everyone there. At least now they know we're not sacrificing babies and everything. So that's always a positive. That's always a positive.
That's right.
We're actually in a town called King, North Carolina. And just to bring the listeners up to speed on these guys in King, very, very, very steeped in Baptist faith. So much so that their war memorial flies the Christian flag, and they fly the Christian flag right outside, just outside the public grounds of the courthouse.
Uh-huh.
About a year ago or so, I'm not exactly sure on timing, but it wasn't a whole long time ago, a ruckus was raised about, you know, the Christian flag being flown there and at the Veterans Memorial, because, you know, some of the veterans were obviously not Christian, that they were honoring. And the town folk turned out almost 100%, I mean, in mass, to protest taking this Christian flag down, so much to the point where you could drive down the streets of King, the residential areas in King and the business areas as well, and about two-thirds of the residences and businesses were flying Christian flags in protest of taking the Christian flag down from the war memorial.
Mm-hmm.
So when we found out we were going to be in King, we were a little bit trepidatious. We're like, I don't know if this is going to be a good idea or not. But it went over really well. We had a few people that walked by. We were in a large field out in front of an amphitheater. And we had a few people that walked by. No negative comments, nothing of the sort, and it turned out to be a very positive event. So I'm very happy that that happened, mostly for the couple, because it would have been a terrible thing for them, you know, at their hand passing to have, you know, such negativity there. But underlying that, just for all of us in general in the pagan community, for people to realize that, you know, we're not all that much different than they are.
Sure,
yeah.
And that was a very positive thing. Sure, and something like that, you know, could be the seeds of an understanding, of an opening of the minds, that they did a public hand fasting right in the center of town. Not, you know, I'm sure it wasn't for any activism type thing. They wanted to recognize their marriage in the pagan ritual of a hand fasting, and kudos to them, and just possibly that energy that was left behind were seeds of understanding. So now I'm sure if that was your own hometown, you know, you're probably you might be faced each year around our Yule celebration that, you know, a nativity is out there, or, you know, at Easter time, you know, a cross and things like that. I don't know if that particular town does that.
Yeah,
but it brought to mind
when
you're.
I'm not sure if the town itself does, but
it's the council.
Right.
Yes. Right. So it brought to my mind about a friend of mine who told me a situation some years ago that, you know, the local small community did each year decorate their county or their town public buildings with signs of the holidays and things like that. And this individual approached them about putting a wreath up there with a pentacle, you know, like
right.
a ribbon on it. And
huh.
they
mm-hmm.
said that this is a symbol of our belief, and they allowed it. They allowed them to display that, sort of like as there was a menorah there. I think that's the right word. Yeah, a menorah.
Yeah, menorah.
And
mm-hmm.
a Christian display. I think it was a nativity. And then the wreath with the pagan symbol on it. And, you know, it didn't create any ill will or anything like that. It was that town particularly was just open to understanding diversity in beliefs.
Absolutely. You know, cultural diversity and religious diversity is something that we strive for. And it's not just we as in pagans, but there are a lot of those in other faiths that are along the same lines too. A lot of people are beginning to understand that You know, just because someone believes a little bit different doesn't make them evil. Just they believe a little bit different. It doesn't change the fact that they may be good people. And I'm really glad to see that starting to happen. When we started the Shrine here in North Carolina, about a year after we started the Shrine, I was approached by a friend of one of our members, and I was told that I had been mentioned by name in a sermon by a local minister. I'm like, oh, really? And the young man said, yeah, I was sitting in the congregation and listening to the preacher do his thing, and he announced that the devil has come to Lexington, North Carolina, and he has a name. It is Chuck Chapman.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Wow. I didn't know whether to take that as a compliment or a slam. So, you know, I mean, obviously he didn't mean it as a compliment, but the way I looked at it is, well, you know, I'm not a flag waving, banner carrying pagan. I wear my pants sometimes. I always wear my raven necklace, but you know, that's neither here nor there. I don't flash everything in anybody's face, but I am very public. Our events are listed in the paper alongside the religious events of other denominations. We've had a newspaper, a front page newspaper article done about us in the local paper. And so it's obvious that we're here, but we're not, you know, we're not waving it. We're not shoving it in anybody's face or anything. So the reason I took it kind of as a compliment is, hey, people are noticing. You know, people are
That's
noticing
right.
that we are here.
And just maybe that comment will cause people to seek you out to see, well, let me find out about this. I've always wondered about paganism or Wicca or however you present your shrine, you know, as your belief system. And, you know, so often that's what I come across a lot of people through our meetup, as well as members wanting to bring their friends to get a better understanding of the belief, of the spirituality of the belief system.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, he might try to damage you, but, you know, just turn around. And we'll get into it in a little bit, but this is so good about what our subject is tonight. So,
absolutely. That's one of the reasons I brought it up.
Oh, okay.
It does lead into the subject that we're talking about, you know, the whole adversity thing. But, yeah, it's you know, even when people come for, you know, just once, out of nothing more than just pure interest, it's always a positive thing because they walk away knowing more than what they came with, or at least having that misinformation corrected,
mm-hmm.
at least as far as the way we believe, you
yeah.
know, and we always present ourselves as this is what we believe. Now, you know, one of my favorite expressions is if you ask 12 witches their opinion, you're going to get 13 answers. Because somebody's going to change their mind right in the middle of the questioning. And I try to explain that, you know, that our religion and our faith system as we practice it is dynamic. It's not static. It's ever-evolving with each individual and our understanding of our connection to the divine. And that seems to shake a lot of people. I try to explain to them that, you know, we're more experiential than we are revelatory. Sure, we have, you know, we have texts that we look to and we revere, and we, you know, authors that we listen to and leaders that we listen to, but we don't take anything that anyone says as holy writ or anything that anybody's written as holy writ or gospel. We always put it through what I call the meat grinder. You know, we try to think about what's going through and we process it and we come to our own conclusions, you know, and in all my videos, I'll say, you know, I don't want you to think like me. I just want you to think, you know, and that's a very important part of the way we practice here at the Shrine. Sure, we have rituals that we do that we're all on the common sheet of music. But outside of that, we're very open to individual thought and individual belief, and we try to share that openness with anyone who comes seeking information. You know, just here, this is the way I think. You know, you may not believe the way I do, because Willow and I, working close together and being, you know, being a mated pair, we don't completely share our beliefs. You know, there are differences between Willow and myself, and I can't see how any two people anywhere can share a complete belief structure, even if it's under a revelatory religion.
It's really an individual path. You know, it's an
absolutely
individual path that, you know, mm-hmm, deity works out individually. Every single person.
Absolutely.
You know, what
and that's
their...
even in the book religions. I mean, you can get two 80-year-old men that's been sitting right next to each other on the same pew every time the Baptist church is open for 50 years. And if you get them separate from each other and start talking to them individually about their core beliefs and what they really think, what they really believe, you're going to find out that they're not exactly alike.
That's correct.
Even in a book religion, even in a revelatory religion, there's going to be differences because we're all individual people. You know, we're not cookie cutter. We're not stamped out by cookie cutter. So we each come to the table with our own experiences and our own thought processes and our own lives that we've come through. So we look at it a little bit different. And
that's
a hallmark
right
of what we believe here at the Shrine.
And when you talk about people that may come, you know, to visit or to be a part of a public ritual, they may have expectations of what they've heard about or what they have seen on television, whether it's in Charmed or whatever like that. And they're looking for something that maybe when they see that you're really regular people and that you love this spirit that you're worshiping and all that, and it's not a case of trying to see how gothic you can look or how much black you can wear or chains and think, you know, whatever their preconception is, and then they see regular right people, it's like, well, this wasn't what I was expecting. So they may leave and not come back, but there again, I say that's planting of seeds, that they may end up finding a group that they mm-hmm thought was what they were going to see at your group or my group or whatever. And when they get there, they may say, you know what, I found what I thought it was all about, but it's not for me. I'm going to go back, you know, and
right,
and try and go back to Thomasville.
And we've seen that, you know, we've seen not specifically that, but that general idea. People have come and talked to us, and they, you know, they leave with this, you know, you can just feel it, like, wow, this wasn't what I was looking for. You won't hear from them for months on end, and they'll show up again, and you talk to them, and they go, well, you know, I checked out so and so, and I won't name anybody, obviously. I checked out so and so because I thought they would be more along the lines of what I was looking for, but you know, they're so rigorous in what they say or whatever the case may be. And so I came back here because, you know, you guys accept me for who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have no expectations of anyone. The only thing that I am very hardline about in the Shrine is integrity. And integrity to me is not, you know, crystal clarity. You don't have to reveal everything. But what you do say, you know, say what you do and do what you say. Be true to yourself and to others. That's the only thing that I'm hardline on. And, you know, I'll pull somebody off in a heartbeat if I see something that I consider to be an integrity issue, never redressing them in front of someone else. I've got too much experience to do that. never redressing them in front of someone else, but pull them off to the side and say, look, you know, this is what I see is going on. You know, what's going on?
That is an awesome responsibility that is placed upon someone who heads up a group, whether it's your shrine or a coven or a group of people, that ultimately someone is the leader. And sometimes you have to do those hard things, and you have to try and do it in a loving, caring way. But
absolutely,
if you don't, it could affect everyone else. It could be like,
absolutely,
you know, I won't necessarily say a cancer, but say negativity. And that is so much mm-hmm about what our talk is about tonight, about positive pagan power. And there again, what you were just exhibiting or talking about there, you have to take it's a different form of the word, but a positive action when it affects your group. And if there's someone there that is affecting it adversely, you need to take a positive approach to overcome that or to talk to the person and try to work it out. So,
absolutely.
I mean,
you know, we endeavor first to try to get to the bottom of the issue with the individual and find out exactly what's going on, or at least have them try to figure out what's going on within themselves and try to, you know, to stay the course, so to speak, or make course corrections to bring them back into that that expectation of integrity. And then, you know, from there, if the course cannot be corrected through a choice of their own, then, you know, they can always vote with their feet.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that's fine, because if they're not meant to be there, goddess may have another place for them, or,
absolutely,
you know, deity in the wide realm of gods may have a different place, a different religion, a different focus for them anyway. So, but tell me this, I have a question. You know, your path goes back to the mid-1980s and all that. When you first entered the path, were you taught, or did you learn of, like, early tools of, and here again, I'm sort of talking about spell work, and I'm talking about energy, but things, were you different before you entered the path versus being on the path? And I'm trying to reach into your memory to back when you first began, your early years, a beginner in the path.
I was very different. I was very different before I was called to the circle, so to speak, to use an old euphemism. Before I was called to the circle, I think we had spoke about this earlier at another time. I've always been very spiritual, but I was very one-wayist. You know, Jesus was the way, the truth, and the life, and that was it. And, you know, you're going to be saved. I don't want to be saved. Oh, yes, you do. That was the way I thought until things started not making sense. And that was the beginning of my call, I believe, to the circle. And once I started working toward training, toward initiation, my initiator, my first teacher, Moonsilf, was pretty hard line on me a few times about, look, you know, this is not the way things are done. And through working with her and successive teachers after that, there are a lot of tools in place, you know, for me personally, that were not in place prior to that. Acceptance, a little bit more tact. People will tell you even today that sometimes I lack a little bit in tact. But I'm not sure if that's just coming around to my age and possible cynicism. But I grew through being us versus them to being we're all us, and we're all in this together, and let's help each other out. And there are definitely tools there that were in place, or that were taught and are in place now to help me deal with those things. There's been a lot of adversity through the years. Spent a dozen years in the military. Several issues there came up. As much as we would like to believe that our military forces, because they're on the front line defending our freedoms, and one of which is freedom of religion, that the culture in the military is very open. Yeah, I don't know what it is now. I left the Army in 95. But during the time that I was in, there were quite a few verbal altercations with peers and superiors trying to set out and say, look, you know, this is who I am and this is who I'm going to be. The first battle was being able to have my faith listed on my dog tags, on my identification tags. Now, a lot of people may not see that as a large deal, but to me it was, because I was very much a soldier in the way I thought. And I felt that if I'm defending freedom, and freedom also includes freedom of religion, then I should be completely free to list my faith on my identification tags. The command didn't see it that way. It took quite a bit of urging and maneuvering and logical arguments to make that happen. Eventually, it happened. Another time that stands out in my mind was we were getting deployed into a combat zone, and I mentioned to someone that I was taking my Alchemy with me, and that got back to the command, and the command says, oh, no, you're not. And that just completely blew my mind, because an Alchemy, as you know, is a dagger. We don't use it as a weapon, at least not in the physical realm. But it is a weapon, and I was being told that I could not take it into a combat zone. But I could take an automatic rifle, and I could take a bayonet, which I was expected to use, but I could not take a ritual dagger because it was a weapon. And that just did not set well with me. I just could not wrap my mind around the logic of that. Obviously, it had nothing to do with, we were going into enemy territory, so I'm sure they weren't worried about customs.
I'm sure it had to do with probably regulations,
passing through the customs, the customs inspectors and everything. I'm pretty sure we weren't worried about those guys. It took a lot to wrap my mind around that. So that was an interesting time. At one point, I decided to wear a pent ring. I was married at the time, and military regulations said that a male can wear one ring per hand. Well, I have my wedding band on my left hand, and I wanted to wear a pent ring on my right, and I did, and I got in so much trouble for that. I think because when you salute, your right hand is the one that's most prominent. So every time I would salute, whoever I was saluting seen the pet ring.
Yeah, sure.
And that caused a few interesting conversations with both junior and some senior officers that just did not want to see it. And, a couple of times I quite frankly told them, as politely and as subordinately as I could, that just because they didn't want to see it didn't mean I didn't have the right to wear it. And if they wanted to press the issue, then we could talk about the crucifix hanging around the neck. So, and I had to go to senior command over that a few times. I was ordered a couple of times to take it off, of which I had to do. But, of course, as soon as they're out of sight, it went right back on.
As a soldier, you still need to follow the rules of the game, so to speak, of soldiering.
Absolutely,
so.
You operate within the guidelines that you're given. The orders were still, you take that ring off. So I did.
I just want to back you up to the situation with the Athame, that obviously you weren't ever able to take that into the combat zone, right?
No, I was not. I was not. I was not able to get that. I was not able to get that resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Officially, before.
So tell me,
Pardon me.
Did you let that drag you down? Did you let that, consume your life? Because, obviously it was important to you, but it wasn't important to the military regulations, or it was specifically excluded. So, what was your reaction? That's why, I'm thinking of this, positive pagan power. Did you then just sort of hand it over?
I wasn't told that I had to hand it over. I meant
hand it over to the goddess, just to still your mind and relax
your spirit. My first reaction was anger and exasperation, confusion. And, you know, that night I knelt at my altar, lit a few candles, and did what I normally did at night. And a calm came over me, and I said, okay, look, you know, up until this time, this is one of the first, a step that I took toward not using tools as much, because up until that time, I had been very tool reliant. So looking back on it, I believe that maybe this was a cosmic 2x4 hitting me in the back of the head, making me realize that tools are not that important.
Hey, bud, you got your fingers, don't you?
It was even better than that. What happened was I just, you know, I'm like, look, you know, I really need this athame, and I need the tool. I need something. And the calm came over me, and, you know, I realized, wait a minute, no, I don't. It's just a piece of metal. It's pretty. I love it. You know, it's got my energy connected to it, but I don't need it because the energy comes from within anyway. And within 30 minutes after the ritual, after the meditation ritual, what do you want to call it, I get a call from a friend of mine who happened to be a Gardnerian high priest. And he says, hey, Chuck, you're deploying on this engagement, right? I said, yeah. He goes, you're going to be up? Sure. He said, I'd like to say goodbye to you before you head out. No problem. Head on over. And he showed up and brought me a crystal athame. Now, it wasn't shaped in a dagger. It was just a crystal, a long crystal, clear quartz crystal.
Yes.
And handed it to me. He goes, for some reason, this thing was yelling at me to get it to come to you. And he handed it to me. And inside, I knew, hey, I've got my athame.
That's right. And that's something that you could take.
Absolutely. It was a rock. What are they going to say? You can't throw a rock?
Yes. I mean, that is a good example of, you know, something that has meaning to you that, you know, you get blocked. And then whether it's through your own mouth or your own power or someone who is called upon to deliver something to you, like your friend. And, you know, it took something and I'm sure that left you a very warm, positive process to go forward with going into a combat zone. I mean, that's already on your mind.
Well, it was weighing heavily on my mind, honestly. I mean, for any out there that have ever been in combat, understand what I'm talking about. And for those that have not, I'm not trying to sound condescending at all, but if you haven't been there, you don't know. If you've never been on a two-way live fire range, it's an experience that changes you dramatically, very quickly. And the same person that goes into combat never comes out. Important. Faith is very important on the battlefield. I don't care what your faith is. There's an old expression that says there are no atheists in a foxhole. I don't know how true that is, but, I mean, the concept is certainly true. Because it seems to me, and from what, you know, from my experience, that when the bullets start flying, you're going to pray to somebody.
Yes, that's for sure.
You have no control over it. You have control of what you're doing, but you have no control of the outcome. You're going to pray to somebody. So faith is a very important aspect out there, and it was a very intense learning experience. Now, backing up a little bit, in my original tradition, we had a saying, and I believe a couple of the traditions use it as well. I think a couple of the BTW traditions use it as well, that says that all true knowledge comes through pain. And you must be willing to suffer to learn. I believe that. When I talk about pain, I'm not talking about just physical pain or spiritual pain or emotional pain or psychological pain, or it could be any of those or any combination of that. You know, even the pain of studying for a test, is still pain. It's suffering of one sort or another. So we learn through suffering. Does that glorify suffering? No, I don't see it that way. It's just an understanding that adversity of any sort is going to help us grow if we look at it the right way. If you're constantly avoiding adversity and you're just going like a rudderless ship, then you're not going to learn.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
You have to understand that no matter what you do, no matter what choice you make, you're always going to encounter adversity, and you're always going to suffer one way or the other, whether it's minor or major. But out of that comes a better person. Pulling in a little bit of esoteric alchemy thought here, you go through a calcination process through every time that you change for the better. You burn away that's not necessary, and you emerge more pure on the other end. How much that change is, really depends on how you look at it and how you take it in and how you process it. We are going to change. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm running off the mouth here.
Well, no, I was just thinking that just what you were speaking on, I look at that as before we choose to come back for another lifetime, there are certain mm-hmm. things that we, consciously decide that we want to work on within ourselves. Some people refer to mm-hmm. it as working out karma or something mm-hmm. like that, but wanting to grow and move forward, in some cases it could be spiritual growth. In other cases, it could be, the temperament, the refining of our soul and our personality and such. And so sometimes when we walk through our life and we're on this path and we do come across something that confronts us, whether some people want to call it adversity or a roadblock or something that would seem to make us stop, it may well be through nice deep meditation, maybe that this is exactly what we wanted to work through in this lifetime. And therefore we just, if we look at it in that way, because in the end we come out better, a better person for it, or a more understanding person for whatever it was that was blocking us. Yeah, we have effectively moved forward and worked on that goal that we set out for ourselves before we even got here. And I realize that might be a concept that not everyone agrees with, but it is certainly something that I feel very compelled in my life.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. Totally. I couldn't have said it better myself. From a grander scheme of things, absolutely. Each lifetime is a lesson, and I firmly believe, as you do, that we choose the lessons that we're going to encounter throughout life. Now, does that mean that we're predestined for specific situations or specific instances? No, I don't believe that. But the issue is set forth, and how we come up to those issues may be different. I don't believe in absolute predestination, but I do believe, as I believe we're saying the same thing, is that we choose ahead of time, before we come through the veil into our current incarnation, that we choose those things that we're going to work on through our life, and through working out karma or whatever you want to call it. We face those things, and if we don't deal with them properly in a way that's beneficial to ourselves on a higher level, then we're just going to come right back to it.
Or even in the course of this particular lifetime, we have every option to modify our original intent, our original goal, and it could be because as we pursue what we sought out for this lifetime, we say, oh, I did not have a clear enough understanding, and so we adjust that path. We put in a new pathway, just a different direction, because as we mature in our knowledge, as our spirit grows and gets more, you know, more knowledge of that which we thought, you know, it's sort of like the same person that comes out to a group expecting a Wiccan gathering to be a certain way, and it's not. They have to adjust their thoughts about that, or their impressions, or what their concept. And just like us in our lives, that, you know, there's many things that I'm sure if you were called upon, and we don't have enough time in this show, but you could probably come up with four or five things that basically occurred in your life that modified your path and allowed you to grow what, you know, you have now accepted as the right growth for you, the right, this, you know, I'm good where I am. I am good where I am, and I'm headed in the right direction. And that direction may change two more times in this lifetime. But, yeah, so I think our concepts of, you know, as we go along this path are very similar, and that we do have the ability to modify.
Course adjustments are always available if we look deep enough, in my opinion. You know, we can there's an expression, I don't know if it expresses that, but I don't know if you would, you know, understand what I'm trying to say here. It's kind of a colloquialism back from South Carolina. It's either you do life or life does you.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think that is an important aspect, because if we are controlled by our circumstances or just accept that the way things are, then, you know, life is controlling us. But instead, mm-hmm. if we say, all right, this is where I am, what do I want to do to change it? I mean, it really is so much the focus of what, you know, this discussion is tonight. And I kind of wanted to know, too, from you, and I was hoping our other priest was on here tonight, too, just to see if there is two perspectives. But do you ever use, here again, dealing with adversity can be many things, okay? Adversity could be that someone came on your property and knocked over a planter and split it wide open after you, you know, took care in buying it or acquiring it and then putting some flowers in it. Or it could be, you know, someone breaking into your car, or, you know, any number of things. So it's not always just a mental adversity, but it can be something, you know, more of a physical nature. Do you rely upon spell work or other tools
both
when you are faced with something like that?
Both. I am very quick to spellcraft, but not out of anger, if that makes any sense. I am very quick to consider spellcraft, but never in a vengeance point of view, more as in a corrective point of view, and more as in a let's come to a resolution here that's good for everyone type point of view. I was beat about the head and shoulders several times earlier in my life in the craft that, you know, spellcraft was never to be used in vengeance, for vengeance or in anger. Mm-hmm. So that sunk in really well. The human tendency sometimes, you know, somebody breaks into your car, you want to get back at them. You know, that's what insurance is for.
There is the natural mind, and, you know, I happen to bring that up because, six, 7 months ago when Stephanie and I went down to Florida for sort of like a kickoff for the South Africa illustration, we weren't going over there to South Africa, but we were kind of like gathering together some folks from the U.S.
Right, yeah, I remember the kickoff down there. Yes, I wasn't there, but I remember you guys being down there.
Remember the reports and
the videos and things, right.
Right, and you know, we have a pretty close relationship with the Florida temples because of our proximity. And
right.
So, you know, we had gone down there and we were staying in a local hotel and things like that. And we got home from the first night, like Friday night. And as it turned out, the hotel was having some type of a competition for Golden Gloves. So there was a lot. It was absolutely packed out. Every parking spot except for one, I finally found one. Around the entire hotel, I found one, and I parked the car and just went on in, not really thinking of anything. Next morning, I come out, and my car was broken into, and my brand-new Surface tablet was gone. I had left it in there. Now, of course, that's my mistake, but then I wasn't expecting the car to get broken into. But in a sense, it was like that could have been a real sour note on the whole kickoff lustration, and there was a hand fasting going on, and then, you know, a lot was going on, but it's sort of like I just had to, you know, I just rolled with the punches. I didn't wish any ill will on the person that did it. I was able to get the window fixed during, you know, the gathering over at Children of Gaia Temple. And, you know, I just didn't let it run me down, or I didn't try and curse the person. I wouldn't do that. I do know, however, that there is such a thing as a threefold return. And I thought, gee, you know, that's a shame. That was an expensive tablet. That poor person that took it.
that boy,
a threefold return on that.
Wouldn't want to be in there.
I wouldn't want to be in their shoes. So, you know, I just had to roll with that. I did not want it to take away from our trip. You know, you travel 7-8 hours or someplace, see your family, meaning people within the tradition, all that. And
spiritual family, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You just don't want it to drag you down. And I didn't. I'm not, you know, patting myself on the back for that. But to me, that's how I just have to roll that way with the punches rather than hold in anger or contempt or things like that.
Absolutely. We have another colloquialism from upstate South Carolina, which is actually probably not too far from you guys if I remember the geography correctly. But we say let it go like water off a duck's back.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
And just let it go. Even before I understood how, you know, or at least to my understanding now, how, you know, the law of threefold works, it was like, you know, that hurt, but it's going to hurt them worse in the end.
Yeah.
You know, so let it be. Just let it be. If I let this event, whatever it may be, if I let this event ruin my day, then I'm giving power to the person that did it to me or did it, the perpetrator. I'm giving power to the perpetrator.
Yes.
And not keeping the power for myself.
There again,
that gives them
life
control
controlling
over my own emotion.
Yes, that's it.
You maintain control. You don't let things shake you. Now, you know, that's obviously the goal. It's not always possible. I mean, we are human. So yeah, there are some human emotions there sometimes. And what I say, what I've done in the past is if I catch that, I catch those thoughts. Those immediate, well, that son of a, then I go, wait a minute, Chuck, hold on.
Mm.
Settle down. I'm not going to give them the power to ruin my day. You know, they've already stolen something from me. Let it be. You know, and then all these, I talk in a lot of cliches and things a lot of times, and that's the way I think sometimes. You know, every dog has his day, water off duck's back, you know, what comes around goes around. You know, even if I'm not
like
the one instigating
Phil,
that.
Huh?
Yeah. That's pretty bad. I don't know if I like that or not.
Well, excuse me.
I thought you were my friend.
Hey, you know, before we wrap up, though, I can't believe it. We're almost to the end of our hour. We didn't stop for a commercial.
Wow.
So people didn't have a chance to run out and get some dessert or make a cup of coffee, but we apologize for that. You can always back it up if you're listening on the archives. But one last thing I just want to throw out there. As a head of a group, as a part of your shrine, you oftentimes will probably be called upon to not necessarily using the word counsel, but talk to someone who's maybe having a bad time, is faced with some form of adversity, whether it's financial, emotional, relationships, work-related, or something like that. What is your... I realize each case is different, so therefore, to try and put it in a nutshell, how would you approach someone, and maybe use an example? I don't want you to reveal any particular conversation you may have had with somebody, but how would you deal with that?
Absolutely, different things. To me, different things call for different techniques. If the person is just upset about something that they have no control over, then I help them to understand that that is exactly what's going on, that they have no control over it. But if they allow it to control them, then they're giving that situation control of them, and they don't have to do that. That's their choice, because everything is their choice. If it is a situation that, on the other hand, if it is a situation where they can control an aspect of it, then I try to impress on them that instead of, you know, bemoaning the fact that this is going on, then fix it. You know, do something to change it. Mm-hmm. Make it better. You know, if for instance, somebody comes to me and is talking about, I don't know, this hasn't happened really so much, but obviously it's an issue in today's economy. I don't have the money to pay the bills. Well, right. You know, you thought about getting a job that pays more money, you know, right. Something you can do something about, you know, and bring them along that line and say, you know, instead of bemoaning the fact that you don't have enough money, you know, the idea in finances is you have to have more income than you do output, bottom line. So yeah. Either you increase the income or you decrease the output, if the output is more than the income. So, you know, one of those things or a combination of those things has to happen.
Or maybe it comes down to choices, too. You know that
it does.
Someone it comes to you with a financial does. Problem, but then they show up with an iPhone 5, and you think, yeah. Okay, well, what was your choice? And, you know, why did you make that choice?
Exactly, and that's one of those things that I would identify. I'm like, you know, pulling something out of the air here, you know, using the iPhone 5. I don't have the money to pay the power bill. I'm like, that's a nice phone you got. Where'd you get it?
Well, oh, it's a special deal.
How much was your power bill?
You can't be that blunt about it.
But you can kind of hint around and try to lead them to that understanding themselves, because if you tell people things like that, most of the time they're not going to listen. You know, they're going to go, and they'll justify their choices. But if you can, and some people think it's kind of sneaky, but it's not in a way. It's leading so that they understand, or they come to the realization that the choices that they're making are not necessarily the best choices for themselves, because if somebody comes to the realization themselves, it's going to sink in a lot deeper than somebody like you or I going, hey, look, you know, you really made a mistake here. Because as soon as you take that tone or as soon as you take that tactic, they're going to shut down and they're not going to listen. They're going to hear you, but they're not going to listen. But if they come to the realization themselves, it's coming from within, so they have no choice but to listen. Now, whether they act on that or not is another choice.
When you're a child, your parents tell you what to do. As you grow, hopefully through good parenting, you learn to make choices and to change your ideas about certain things. And you're right, you know, you can't tell someone what to do, but possibly just by talking about alternatives, they can the light bulb go off and say, you know what? Maybe that was a bad decision I did, you know. So, and learn from it. They maybe can't undo that decision, but the next time faced with a choice of paying the power bill or buying the latest
electronics, the next version of the iPhone,
you know, it's a process, and it's not something that happens overnight. Well, I have to say this has been a wonderful discussion, Onyx.
It has.
I appreciate
it has oh,
that.
It
I don't know what we would have done if we had a third person on here. We're just so jabberjaws, the two of us. So.
It would have been. Can I say something?
Hello. Yeah. So,
I'm here.
Anything final? Would you like to? Is there have any plugs that you need to do?
Well,
anything coming up?
Absolutely. Coming up in October, I think we the dates have been set. October 27th here in Lexington, which is the town we were in prior to moving to Thomasville, which is only like 10 miles down the road, at Finch Park. We're having our second annual Pagan Potluck Picnic, where the shrine hosts and we invite pagan groups, pagan-friendly people, you know, anybody that's interested from the entire area, anybody that wants to drive in from other counties can come in and visit and fellowship and exchange ideas and everything. We just all bring, you know, bring something to share on the table for the feast, and we're looking forward to a good turnout for that. Last year was our first one, and we had over 20 people there.
That's great. Now, that coincides with Samhain, so do you do a Samhain ritual, or is this more or less just a fellowship-type gathering?
This is just a fellowship thing, because the reason we chose not to do a Samhain ritual at the Pagan Potluck Picnic is because we're inviting, openly inviting other groups as well. So we don't want to step on anybody's toes for their rituals.
Mm-hmm.
But we do, the following Sunday, we're holding a public Samhain ritual here at the shrine. So we're doing that as well. So, in fact, those two weekends, we have three things going on. October 27th is the Sunday. That afternoon, we're doing the Pagan Potluck Picnic. And then the following Saturday would be the first Saturday of the month, which we have a class here for all shrine members. And then that Sunday, we host a public Samhain event. So, you know, for three out of four of the weekend days of those 2 weeks, we've got events going on. So it's going to be quite busy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we love staying busy. We thoroughly enjoy it. We like what we do. We like the people that we encounter, even if they don't like us. We like the people that we encounter because we try to look at it as any interaction is a positive interaction because we're going to learn something one way or the other.
Sure,
you know,
that's right.
Whether we learn that we completely disagree with them or whether we learn that we're on a similar path, one way or the other we're going to learn. And we share ideas, and, you know, we share fellowship. Our public events are exactly that. They're open to the public. We always hold our Sabbaths the closest Sunday afternoon to whatever the Sabbath proper is. We chose to do that on a Sunday because more people from the public will be able to be there.
And maybe catch some people coming back from church.
Absolutely, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Go down to the Baptist church, put flyers on windshield wipers. Yeah, that would be the thing.
Well, you know, let me just mention Sacred Sea Temple. We'll be having our Witches Ball. Each year we have a different theme, and I unfortunately forget the theme for this year. I think it's Halloween around the world or something like that. So we're going to be doing that. It'll be, you know, we always have our gathering on the last Saturday of the month. So that doesn't exactly hit Samhain this year, but it is pretty close. And we always have a good time there. But I do want to give a shameless plug that we just came off of last weekend. This past weekend we had the Lustration of the Living ritual and gathering at Sacred Sea Temple. And I am so much hoping that it will be uploaded to YouTube soon because we filmed it. And it is truly, such an amazing ritual that was created by Stephanie taking in the shaman shaman images. Shaman is a lot of music, a lot of singing, and it's basically taking Lord Don's of the Krillian tradition, his basic ritual, and as he says all the time, you know, it's the framework. You know, each group can modify it as they see, but it's still the same basic framework, and it was just put to music and to dance, and it apparently is taking 60-some hours to get it all uploaded into YouTube.
Wow.
So hopefully there will be a post on the various boards throughout our pagan network here so people can share and enjoy that. And that was such a wonderful ritual this time.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. Unfortunately, I've never had the opportunity to attend a lustration. That is on my list. It will happen. Hopefully more than one of them. Didn't you guys host last year as well? During the spring?
April 2012, we had the global lustration. And that was a lustration of the ancestors, but there again, Stephanie took it and she put it to some music and dance, pretty much though following the same script that is published on thekrillian.com, but interjecting a lot of music. This is more of an interpretive illustration of the living, as much of the script, although if you follow the script, you'll see the various phases of the illustration work its way through. So that
the reason I mentioned the last illustration is because I'm so proud of what was put together. Oh, I'm sure it's amazing. I'm sure it's amazing. I haven't seen anything come out of Sacred Sea that isn't amazing.
Oh.
So, you know.
Well, thank you so much. And that's all due to our high priestess, Stephanie.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure you have a lot to do with it, too. So, you know.
I'm behind the
vows,
too,
as well. I hear you. See, the reason I mentioned the last illustration that you guys held was that I had intended to be there. I wanted to be there, but one of those, it didn't happen, funding fell through type thing. We had, I hate to call it a financial emergency, but it was a financial thing that wasn't in the plans. So we had to divert funds to make that happen. And, you know, unfortunately, it didn't happen. So hopefully going forward, we'll be able to make it. I was hoping to get up to the regional that Lord Terry and Reverend Alyssa and all did up there in Pennsylvania. Was not able to make that. The funding that was supposed to go to that one came in late. It just wasn't meant to be.
Those were the circumstances that we deal with, and we can let them get us down, or we
can
move forward.
Move on.
Right.
Move on.
And,
when it's time for me to be an attendant. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that unless there is a decision for a bunch of the Southeast temples to get together for illustration, you know, Sacred Sea will pretty much always have a regional illustration in September for those that want to, you know, come out. We welcome all. We had a few folks come up from Florida, our Jacksonville family over there, and we always look forward to seeing them.
Jacksonville's just over the border into Florida.
Yes.
I used to live in Jacks, Florida. It's like I lived in Jacks, and then I moved to Kingsland. If you're familiar with that area, I moved to Kingsland, and I was still working in Jacks. So I commuted from Kingsland, Georgia, to Jacksonville, Florida every day, which was only like a 20-minute, 30-minute commute.
Yeah.
So
that would be around, St. Simeon's Island or something like that? Or is that further up?
Do you know where St. Mary's is? Do you know where St. Mary's is? You know where the naval base is down there?
Okay.
We were just west of the naval base. St. Mary's is where the naval base is. Right across the highway is Kingsland. Right across, I think it's, 90, I think it is, that goes down the coast. Is that 90?
95.
Or 95, I'm sorry. It's been a while since I've been there. Right across 95 from St. Mary's is Kingsland, Georgia. I mean, St. Mary's, Georgia, Kingsland, Georgia, the dividing line is the highway. We lived on the Kingsland side. And I would just, it was a stone's throw to the highway. We lived 300 meters away from the exit ramp, maybe. And I jumped on the highway, went straight down 95, and where I worked was just off the exit off of 95 in Jacksonville, Florida. And the only time, you've been through Jacksonville, obviously. I would like to know if you know who the brain surgeon was that put a drawbridge on an interstate.
I have to tell you that every time that we've been around Jacksonville, we've taken the bypass.
Oh, okay.
We have visited with the folks down there. It's like south of Jacksonville. And
right.
So we were always able to take the – I've never gone through the center of Jacksonville. So
I did not – I have never figured that one out. You know,
well,
right there on I-95, there's a drawbridge.
that doesn't make any sense
to me. But, you know, why not make the bridge higher, you know, so you don't hold up interstate traffic? I don't know. So, no.
Well, that is a bit off of what our
subject
was. I need to close down the show, but again,
absolutely.
Onyx, my super appreciation for all that you contributed to this show tonight. I thank
you. Thank you for having me, Mike, as always.
And I look forward to the next time.
Absolutely. You take
yes,
care of
so.
Yourself, and blessings to you and to the temple down there. And thanks
thank
so much
you very
for
much,
hosting.
And same to yours. Blessed be.
Blessed be. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us on WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. You can hear us every night right here on Blog Talk Radio, or download us later on iTunes. Please check our schedule for accurate show times. For all questions, comments, or show suggestions, you can email us at pagans tonight@gmail.com. And let us know how we're doing. We'd love to hear from you. You can also visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on LiveJournal. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow night. Good night, and blessed be.